From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Friday, May 1st. I'm Jonathan Aul. Illinois continues to see high demand for new data centers, and that means an increasing strain on the state's utility grid.
So their demand is continuous and concentrated, as opposed to a city's demand being spread out.
Now, Illinois state lawmakers are considering legislation to rein in new data center proposals. That's coming up on The Gateway. More than a dozen local organizations and advocacy groups are calling for a general strike across the St. Louis region today. As St. Louis Public Radio's Katie Gravitch reports, many groups are hoping to combine a wide range of issues into a shared movement.
The participating groups share general political discontent, often related to wealth, inequality, and the presence of ICE. But specific policy goals vary by group. Cindy Oberly-Dom is with the Illinois Federation of Teachers and is leading the Belleville demonstration. She says the Metro East event will focus on funding issues in public schools.
This is part of the broader movement where we're all trying to get back to letting the people and our voices be heard over the very few elite who are in power.
May Day protests are also slated to take place in St. Louis, Warrenton, Pacific, and Hillsboro, Missouri. I'm Katie Gravitch, St. Louis Public Radio.
The Missouri Workers Center and other groups will march in St. Louis's downtown West neighborhood starting at 5:30 p.m. tonight at Allo Plaza and ending at Maggie O'Brien's Irish Pub. There will also be an anti-data center protester outside the city municipal court. A commission appointed by the governor will soon oversee the Missouri State High School Activities Association. The House sent a letter to Governor Mike Kehoe's desk yesterday afternoon establishing the board. It will consider appeals from students, parents, or coaches about contests and transfer student eligibility. The board may step in after appeals have gone through MSHA's own process or if someone comes to the commission directly. The legislation is a pared-down version of the original bill, but Democrats who still voted against it say government oversight of a private nonprofit is wrong. Kehoe named it as a priority during his State of the State address in January. It comes after Missouri Attorney General Catherine Hanaway launched an investigation into whether MSHA illegally considered prospective board members based on race and sex. The United States Department of Justice joined the lawsuit in early April. A Missouri court has rewritten the ballot language for a proposed referendum over the state's newly gerrymandered congressional map. Noah Taborda reports.
The Western District Court of Appeals ruled that a previous ballot summary written by Secretary of State Denny Hoskins included unsupported claims about their map. So, judges certified a shorter, more neutral summary for the referendum, which is backed by the Political Action Committee, People, Not Politicians. If the referendum qualifies for the November ballot, voters would be asked to approve the 2025 redistricting plan, aimed at helping Republicans pick up another U.S. House seat and ousting Democratic Congressman Emanuel Cleaver. I'm Noah Taborda.
Missourians could soon see changes in how property tax measures are presented at the ballot through legislation the Senate passed yesterday. The bill contains several provisions, although none make sweeping reductions. Sponsor Senator Sandy Crawford said one focus of the bill is to better inform taxpayers on what they're voting on when it comes to property tax measures.
This bill is probably going to be too light for some people, but I can say if I used one word to categorize this bill, the word would be transparency.
It requires any ballot measure that changes residential real property taxes to describe the effect in dollars owed per $100,000 of a property's market valuation. Senators voted 31-2 to pass the bill. It now goes to the House. The nation is celebrating the 100th anniversary of Route 66 this year. Things got kicked off yesterday morning in Springfield, Missouri. Chris Drew reports.
The pre-dawn hours were full of chatter and the buzz and hum of generators and trucks in downtown Springfield, Missouri. NBC's Today Show was preparing to celebrate the centennial of Route 66. Eager audience members were lined up for blocks. When things got underway, the morning featured a bit of history and Springfield trivia, the Missouri State University Marching Band, a showcase of local food, including a spotlight on Springfield-style cashew chicken, and guest MSU alum and Missouri native John Goodman. Governor Mike Kehoe made an appearance to gift the Today Show's hosts with a key to the city.
Springfield is the birthplace of Route 66. Today is the 100th anniversary of the famous telegram that asked Washington, D.C. to name it Route 66.
The governor said tourists come from across the globe to visit Route 66. He added that events are planned from Joplin to St. Louis all summer. I'm Chris Drew.
Clayton officials commemorated a Black Baptist church that was displaced by the city more than 60 years ago yesterday. First Baptist Church of Clayton stood on Brentwood Boulevard from 1894 through 1961. City leaders placed a commemorative plaque near the original site yesterday morning. The city rezoned the neighborhood, pushing residents out. Derek Novel attended the church when it was still in Clayton. He says the commemoration is important to teach people about the city's once thriving Black community.
Most people here don't know anything about the Black community that used to be here in Clayton. If not by the mid-50s, certainly by the late 50s, just about everybody had moved out, you know, or had been obliged to move out.
The church moved to Union Boulevard, where it still stands today. The Foodies Eat First Fest is back for a second year, returning this Saturday and Sunday to downtown St. Louis. St. Louis Public Radio's Laura Hamden has the details.
The Foodies Eat First Fest is a chance to sample offerings from more than 20 local restaurants, chefs, and mixologists. Food and lifestyle content creator Brad Ntowaldi organized the festival, which is a little different this year. It will cost less, have more vendors, and will return for a weekend in August.
This year, we fine-tuned everything. We set everybody up for success. But yeah, it's very intentional, and it's like kind of like my love letter to St. Louis.
One of the unique additions is the festival's partnership with the Muni, which runs Meet Me in St. Louis later this year. A local chef will create modern versions of dishes found during the 1904 World's Fair. Tickets for the food festival are now available online and will be for sale at the door. I'm Laura Hamden, St. Louis Public Radio.
St. Louis's restaurant scene got a couple of national hot spots last month. Fast casual Mediterranean spot Kava opened in Cottleville, while Korean bakery Paris Baguette came to Olivet. Coffee shop's Art Cafe opened in St. Peter's, and the owners of Fiddlehead Fern opened Fern Grove in the Grove. Then there are the pop-ups. Nudo House STL is now home to Sonic the Hedgehog Speed Cafe, and the Boathouse has a wine bar while undergoing renovations. To see what spots closed their doors last month, go to stlpr.org. Illinois has the fourth highest number of active and planned data centers in the United States. State leaders once promoted the industry as a means of economic development. But as Abhisala Dahunsi reports, some lawmakers are raising concerns that new data center proposals could drive up utility costs and threaten the state's natural resources.
State Representative Carol Ammons of Urbana says there's a staggering demand for data centers in Illinois. Speaking at a press conference earlier this year, she says the utility companies ComEd and Ameren have received proposals for new data centers that would require a combined 44 gigawatts of electricity each year. For comparison, she says Orlando, Florida uses 1 gigawatt of electricity a year.
That means that the data centers waiting to connect to our grid plan need much more power than 44 Orlandos put together. You and I shouldn't have to pay.
The representative introduced a bill called the Power Act. It would require developers to pay for their own renewable energy to power the centers as well as grid upgrades instead of passing those costs onto local residents. But advocates for the data center industry say they already account for their impact on the energy grid, and new costs are not passed on to ratepayers.
The industry is 100% committed to ensuring its full cost of service, and is already doing that.
Brad Teets with the Data Center Coalition says these development projects help bring in revenue, which can lower a state's financial burden.
The cost of today's increasing electricity prices is in large part due to the need to modernize our aging grid. And when data centers enter a locality, they are taking on a greater share of the fixed costs that are leading to these increased prices.
Demand is growing for these data centers since they support artificial intelligence. They transmit data that are useful for large language models like ChatGPT or Google Gemini. But Aisha Josh-Kuhn, a professor at Boston University who studies energy needs for data centers, says that also means they increase the demand on the electric grid.
AI data centers are essentially becoming some of the largest single electricity customers in the region. So their demand is continuous and concentrated as opposed to a city's demand being spread out.
These facilities also generate lots of heat and require massive amounts of water to keep them cool. Xiaolei Ren is an associate professor studying the community impacts of big tech at the University of California, Riverside. He warns the centers can put stress on a region's water supply, especially as demand spikes in the summer.
So these millions of gallons of water request, capacity requests from the local water infrastructure is really straining the system. And in many cases, the communities don't have that much water available to support the demand.
Teet says the data center industry used 39 billion gallons of water across the last year. But he says that figure is dwarfed by the half trillion gallons consumed by the food and beverage industry and the even larger amount utilized for agriculture.
The data center industry, has been a large water user, but by no means the largest, and we're increasingly getting more and more efficient.
Still, some communities with more limited water supplies are worried data centers could affect their reservoirs. Republican State Senator Chapin Rose says the projects pose a unique threat to the Mahomet Aquifer, an underground layer of rock that stores and transmits usable water in east central Illinois.
It is our sole source aquifer, meaning there's no other place to go for a million Illinoisans. You can't just flip a switch and turn on a spigot from somewhere else.
Rose has introduced a separate bill that would ban data center companies from using the aquifer and require them to seek alternate water sources. Concerns about the costs and impacts of data centers have also reached Governor J.B. Pritzker's office. In 2019, the governor signed a law that created tax incentives to support data center operators, but in this year's budget address, he called for a pause on those incentives.
In the face of rising demand and surging prices, I'm proposing a two-year pause on authorization of new data center tax credits.
Lawmakers are currently debating their proposals to regulate data centers and hoping to pass a bill before the spring session ends at the end of May. I'm Abisola Dehunsi.
That story comes to us from member station WILL, Illinois Public Media in Urbana. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Jonathan All, and from the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this has been The Gateway.